we're delighted this morning to have in studio with us a newly declared candidate for the European elections, Mr. Eddie Punch. Hello, Eddie. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Delighted to have you here with us.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Great. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Eddie Punch is from Cratlow, so I'm a neighbour of you here in East Clare. I suppose I grew up on the family farm, and after I left school, I got involved in Mocra. I was the chair of the Six Mile Bridge Mocra Club back in the day, and I used to know quite a few people up here in Scariff who were involved in Lochdurg Mocra at the time.
Yeah.
But I went back to college at the age of 23 and I did a degree in European Studies, and then I started working first in community development and rural development. I began my career in Laois, and I'm one of the few people I know who have had two jobs in Laois, even though I come from Clare. So I went to West Limerick Resources, worked out there for a while in Newcastle West, and helped farmers, particularly farmers from smaller backgrounds who were outside the mainstream farming circles, but who were struggling in different ways about in terms of access to schemes, in terms of, you know, even the isolation that you get in rural communities as well. And then after that, I went to work for a short period with the Irish Cattle and Sheep Farmers Association, which turned into 25 years of representing farmers.
And you're now the secretary.
I've been the general secretary in that time. And that's a job that involves negotiating with government in Dublin, and it also involves representing their interests in Brussels. So for many years now, I've been over and back to Brussels to advise or lobby or persuade MEPs to take the views of the people I represent into account and to try and help them to be knowledgeable when they debate what's being discussed, what reports are being done, what legislation is being proposed in the European Parliament. And of course, as well, in that period, we've worked with farmers in terms of, you know, not only helping them with the problems they might have with, for example, schemes, inspections, that kind of thing, but we also are acutely aware of the mental health issues and the pressure that people are under in farming. But that's just not farming. That's everybody.
Yeah.
Like, you're coming across people, and I'm acutely aware that mental health is a big, big issue for many, many people. And I know this through personal life and through meeting people in my job. Mm. And I think, you know, when we look at the kind of raft of regulation that's coming from the European Union, that's not taken into account. The way in which small businesses, farmers, are under pressure because of regulation, targets, demands being put in them, and things are constantly changing at a faster speed. And I think, you know, we have to slow down and ask, how does this affect families whose first job is to put food on the table, to rear their kids, to keep them on the straight and narrow, and to help them achieve their opportunities as well? So I suppose after 25 years at this, I looked at the people that I had been talking to in terms of MEPs, and I said, I think now Clare needs a strong representative in Brussels. There hasn't been one since Paddy Lane. That's over 20, 25 years ago. I'm running as an independent to represent all of the people in the Midwest region, because I passionately believe that the Midwest region is not getting the opportunity to develop to its full potential.
Yeah, because the representatives that are the nearest for us are Cork and Kerry, aren't they?
I would imagine. We just have a, I mean, the South, we didn't even know who's in the South constituency, because as far as I'm concerned personally, the MEP, you know, they're elected and they seem to vanish. We don't never hear them again.
But you see, possibly if we had one.
Yes, probably.
In the area that we would know of.
So the South constituency, the counties are Carlow, Clare, Cork, Kerry, Kilkenny, Limerick, Tip, Waterford, Wexford and Wicklow. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a huge,
huge area.
Yeah, it's all of Munster and South Leinster as well added in. So it's a huge area, and there is differences, obviously, you know, in terms of priorities. There's differences in terms of, you know, urban and rural.
Urban, yeah, you have city and country.
And, you know, so it is a massive constituency. Yeah. It's not like a council or a general election where you can literally meet everybody you might hope to get a vote off of. So that's a big challenge. In my job in ICSA, of course, I've been dealing with farmers in 26 counties for a long time.
Yes,
so, you know, I have some, I suppose, appreciation of the differences in mindset as well as, you know, actual practical background as well. But there's no doubt. I have to represent all 10 counties if I'm to be successful. But of course, I'm hoping that the Clare people will want a Clare representative in Brussels, because when I think of, for example, a debate that's going on at the moment about Shannon or about Dublin Airport wanting to expand by 25%, and we have a great airport here in Clare, it should be the gateway to Europe for us.
It's completely underutilized.
But we have 4% of passenger traffic. Dublin has 85%, and they want more. And I think that's a big problem. I think it's a big problem that Shannon has no direct connectivity with the key European cities. None of the capitals except twice a week to Paris. That's it.
That's all,
And that's a huge disadvantage from our tourism, which is really important in Clare.
Connectivity,
It's important in terms of if anybody is trying to develop a new business that's export-oriented. It's important in terms of investment here. And, you know, when you look at that great company, Kerry, they built one of their, you know, a new massive new facility on the Naas Road coming out of Dublin, which should really have been in the Midwest. But one of the issues there was connectivity to Europe. They didn't have it from the Midwest region. And that was a real lost opportunity for the people of the Midwest. Now, look, I know that there is quite a bit of prosperity nowadays. People have jobs in the Midwest. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be ambitious for more, and we shouldn't be ambitious that people who go to college, for example, in Limerick or you know, the Midwest region, that they can't aspire to having interesting and exciting careers ahead of them in this location. And, you know, there's a farmer, Liam Meehan, who was a well-known dairy farmer. And I remember 20 years ago or more, he was describing how his ambition would be that his kids could find interesting opportunity around the homestead or around the area they grew up in. And I think that's, you know, I have a neighbour now, Conor Ryan, who was man of the match in the 2013 All-Ireland final. And he's now working from Cratloe, but he's working for a New York firm. And that's great. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's really the ambition of very many parents that their families have opportunity in the area, they grew up.
Whereas before people had, you had to leave.
Yeah.
You had to go to Dublin or you had to go abroad.
But and at the same time, young people do take opportunity to, you know, get experience abroad. And that's why, actually, I think it's really important that Shannon has connectivity to as many places as possible. And I think, you know, we're not getting enough strong representation on that.
What would you feel in relation to housing, Eddie? Like, there's a lot of, well, I won't say a lot, most of the houses that have gone up in Clare and other counties recently has all been social housing. What about the young couples that are coming up? It's cheaper now to buy a house than build a house, the way things have gone with building prices. Is there any housing estates going to be put up for normal couples that can just buy a house, that have two jobs, you know, well-paid jobs, but that they just don't want to build or they don't want to travel away, they want to stay around.
They want to move into, you know, and they move just into want the local to, area.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Yeah, and I despair actually of the kind of Dublin mindset, which is rules and regulations. So government keeps bringing in new rules. They have a residential zoned land tax, which is actually going to affect farmers who have land near to towns and villages. And it's but it's not actually doing anything about putting houses in place. It's just punishing farmers in that case. I think, and you know, sometimes you have to look back to look forward. And you know, when I think of Father Harry Bohan, set up the Rural Housing Organisation and built 2,300 houses in 13 different counties. And he did it without much help from the government back in the day. And he had a philosophy about young couples setting up home in rural areas and in towns and villages. It was very village. Like, that was visionary. And I think we need more of that. I think we need to empower local communities to do more. I think, you know, we have too much, I suppose, focus on everything being centralised in Dublin. And I don't think we'll solve problems that way. I think if you look at, even, for example, health, another crisis area, we had regional health boards and people thought they weren't working as effectively as they should. So they set up the HSE, centralised it all in Dublin, and if anything, things have got worse and worse.
Yeah. I mean, sure, in the Midwest, we have a major health problem.
And even then, the mindset is centralise it all in University Hospital Limerick, at the expense of Ennis and Nina and St John's and all of that. Like, there's a mindset that I think we need to kick back against, which is that, you know, centralise everything in Dublin, centralise decision-making in Brussels and Dublin. And we should trust local communities to find solutions for themselves, help them and enable them, certainly. One of the issues is that we have far more public expenditure. In Ireland, it is more centralised than in any other European country. In places like Denmark, an awful lot of public expenditure is through regional or local authorities. So we are going to have a directly elected mayor in Limerick. I think that might be a start changing this. And if Eddie Punch is elected to the European Union, one of my priorities would be to work with that directly elected mayor, so that there is a back and forth between Brussels and the Midwest region in terms of making sure that the needs of the Midwest are heard in Brussels, but also in making sure that what's going on in Brussels is directly linked back to the people here in Clare, Limerick and North Tipperary and North Kerry and so on.
Because we do need someone that knows what's going on the ground as well. There's no point in swanning off to Brussels, as some have done, and forgetting what's at home, the people that elected them, in my own personal opinion. Do you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And when we saw the nature restoration, you know, I strongly feel that the MEPs who voted for it were not tuned in to the people on the ground. And why do I say that? Well, you see, I'm a long time looking at directives that come from Brussels. And they always start out with the best of intentions. But when we say, for example, the Habitats Directive, it sounded like a good idea in practice. But the farmers who had designated land have, you know, they were promised that they would be looked after for allowing their land to be designated. They had no choice in the matter. But people in Henharrier areas, people, you know, who had designations, saw that their farming was restricted, their land was devalued, and the funds that were supposed to be there for them never materialised. When you look at the new nature restoration law, I see the same danger. There's in the clause, initially there was no need for any funding. Then it was changed in the end, in the face of opposition, to there will be a report done 2 years into this to assess the needs for funding. Now, I've been around a while and I know that isn't worth the paper it's written on. And you see, one of the things that frustrates me is that you have people at, you know, I suppose, in Brussels and in Dublin who are academically excellent, sitting at a laptop, finding ways to tell farmers and people on the ground how they should do more for nature restoration. And that grieves me, to be honest, because every farm I know, not only has the current generation, but previous generations have put in place the hedgerows, the trees that give us our... It's not all bad. I mean, it's not all good. We need to improve. Don't get me wrong. But farmers, in the right way, approached in the right way, are always ambitious to improve the farm they live on.
Yeah. And they have a lot of knowledge of it.
There's economics, but there's also the fact they get up out every morning and they listen to the bird song at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. It's their pride and joy. So if you work with those people, a lot can be achieved. But if you try to impose, you know, regulation from Brussels that will ultimately, potentially in some cases, ruin the economic viability. And without economic sustainability, there is no ecological sustainability. So we have to get that right. And I think we need more people in Brussels to make that case. And, you know, we have 689,000 kilometres of hedgerow in Ireland. Some of them need to be improved. But let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater here.
What are your views on carbon emissions from the farmers?
Yeah, you see, again, this is a huge frustration. Farmers are willing to do more. But we've had a narrative for the last few years as if farmers are the biggest cause of global warming. And that simply is not the fact. And, you know, I get frustrated that the debate seems to be all focused on cutting the national herd. The facts are the national herd was at 7.3 million when we joined the EU. It's at 7.4 million today. It's been remarkably consistent over that time. Miles Allen, Professor Miles Allen of Oxford, has demonstrated that a stable herd is just exactly where we need to be in terms of not contributing to more global warming. So we've actually done that in Ireland, despite the narrative. At an EU level, we have less cows now than we had in 1973. Okay. But in the same period, world population has doubled and they all need to be fed. And I think we need balance between food security, energy security and climate. And I think for the last few years, we've been focused on climate, but forgetting about energy security and food security. And energy security, was there was a complacency around that until Putin decided to invade Ukraine. And the dangers of being complacent about other issues have now been exposed. And it's the same thing with food security. One of the things that's very frustrating, of course, is there is a glib, I think, cynicism at EU level that, you know, we can impose all sorts of restrictions on farmers. We'll set targets to reduce our emissions, but nobody wants to debate what happens then. And the answer is the food will be produced somewhere else because we have to feed the world. That's non-negotiable. So if we cut the national herd in Ireland and we grow it somewhere outside of the European Union and import the food afterwards, that's not climate action. That's hypocrisy. And, you know, I think we also have to be mindful that we have a climate action plan. The climate action plan is every sector has targets. That's been presented in a way which is unfair to farmers, in my view. What you hear is farmers are asked to cut back their emissions by 25%. It sounds like they got off light. But actually, if you look at it in real figures, the farming target is to reduce by 5.75 megatons. The electricity sector is to reduce by 7.5 megatons. Those are not hugely dissimilar. But the ESB strategy is to spend 10 billion between now and 2030 in order to deliver their target. So it costs money. But the ESB will pass that cost back to 3.2 million captive consumers who will pay for this without any say. But we're asking 100,000 farmers to do something roughly similar, and nobody has explained where the farmers are going to get all of these billions. And I think that's fundamentally wrong. The other piece about this is, of course, that farmers are also sequestering carbon. And I think that has to be, they have to get credit for that. And that's not, that hasn't happened to date. And when you hear companies and global corporations talking about they're on a journey to net zero, some of that is actually greenwashing, or some of it is actually working off the backs of what farmers do. So no other, you know, so if you're in aviation or energy, or you can't really sequester carbon. Farmers can. But what's been happening for the last few years is that a lot of these companies are buying carbon credits and saying they're nearly at net zero.
I think a lot of it too seems to be that, you know, you're saying about the carbon emissions. Oh, yeah, the farmers have to do this. But a lot of people that aren't involved in agriculture don't realize the steak you buy, the bit of lamb you buy, the chicken you buy, it comes from the farmers. Do you know, they don't seem to connect the two at all. That all the farmers are the baddies and carbon emissions, and they have to cut down. And but do they
depend on farming more than they realize?
Absolutely, they don't seem to realize.
Well, one of the reasons Eddie Punch wants to get elected here is because I believe that this is about a lot more than farmers. This is about the future of food. And you know, when we joined the EU in 1973. We became part of the Common Agricultural Policy. But the Common Agricultural Policy goes back to the Treaty of Rome, the foundation of the EU, or, you know, previously known as the EEC and so on. And the key reason they had a Common Agricultural Policy was in the aftermath of World War II, food scarcity and indeed, you know, almost, you know, nutritional challenges were a real fact. They were afraid that the people of Europe would starve. So they put in place the cap to make sure that there would be an abundant supply of good quality food available at an affordable price. And farmers across Europe have delivered that magnificently, and it's sometimes forgotten. So today, you know, and we're part of a single market now of 27 countries. So it's not like that we can grow everything here or that it's even wise to do that. Some people say we should, but I think that's not realistic, because each country in the European Union specialises in what people have found out they're good at. So you can't wave a magic wand and convert a dairy farm to a blueberry farm overnight. Like that's kind of cloud cuckoo land.
It's cloud cuckoo land.
But because we have all of the farmers in the European Union contributing to our collective food security, we have a great abundance of high quality food products. So you can have a Chianti wine from Italy with, you know, pasta produced in Italy and an Irish piece of beef. Yeah. And you have the best of all worlds, maybe tomatoes from Spain. And you're getting it at a lower cost than if we were all trying to do it on a localized level, to be honest, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think we should throw that away. And there's a rich heritage of food production right across Europe. I meet farmers from every country in Europe, and they're very similar in a lot of ways, but they're also very different. But they all have this same pride in turning the land they have into some kind of special product. We have to be very careful before we lose that family farm model, because there are other people who are proposing alternative visions, and they're quite aggressive in Europe now. So everything from, you know, lab-grown meats to insect protein and even plant-based burgers, all of these are designed to give big returns to Wall Street investors and Silicon Valley disruptors. And I think we have to be careful to say that food... The farmers, the 10 million farmers in Europe, have served us well over the years in producing us with a rich variety of high quality food, highly nutritious. And I mean, there are issues, of course, about, you know, obesity, and there are issues about the quality of food. And I would argue that most of them are about ultra processed foods. What comes off farms starts out as a real high quality product.
Good quality, yeah.
And we need to protect that. And so a vote for Eddie Punch isn't about just farmers. It's about the future of food and the future of the quality of food that we in the EU have enjoyed.
So, Eddie, as you said, it's not your, you know, if somebody, people vote for you, it's not just for farmers. You know, you're probably interested in aviation, all the different types of businesses that are going on in the area. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the starting point there, I suppose, is that our tourism, for example, which is so important in Clare, is utterly linked to the landscape we have, which is managed by farmers for many generations. If you think of the Burn, this wonderful ecological, miracle that we have in Clare, that's down to a scheme, by the way. Well, it's down to years and years and generations of looking after of the Burn.
By the farmers.
But it was going somewhat, maybe, there was it wasn't perfect. But they put together a scheme in the Burn, which, when they all cooperated with the farmers on the ground, and you had a guy called Brendan Dunford who was a visionary in delivering this, great results have been achieved. And that's why I say we have to talk to people at a local level and work with them. But that, of course, then is underpinning the tourism business in Clare. Yeah. Unfortunately, however, I don't think that in Dublin or in Brussels they have an appreciation of how important tourism is in the west of Ireland. And that's why, one of the reasons why I'm concerned about Shannon Airport is not being used to its full potential. So I want to see the Midwest achieve all of its potential in terms of economic development, in terms of tourism. And when you hear this debate about we need to increase passenger traffic into Dublin Airport by 25%, this really frustrates me, because we have in Shannon Airport 4% of the passenger numbers coming into this country. And I think that's not good enough. And it's this, and Cork Airport, by the way, is 6%. We need our share. And that's not just, I suppose, a parish pump view. It's about Dublin is getting too much economic development, and we need to counterbalance that by growing the region in the west. And there are all kinds of reasons for this. Dublin is too congested. People can't afford to live there anymore. And I want to see, you know, politicians who are totally focused on our region here in the Midwest and say, you know, we could be so much more. But a starting point is fair play in terms of Shannon Airport getting its share of the passengers. We have no connectivity with any capital city in Europe except twice a week to Paris, which is hardly good enough. And that's an effect not just in tourism. It's an effect on businesses that are trying to export to Europe. It's an impact in terms of people from capital cities coming to visit us here. That impacts us in terms of investment as well. Yeah. So all of those reasons mean we should be doing more. There's also, of course, the question of wind energy off the Atlantic. It's been, you know, long fingered. There's a lot of talk about, you know, we need to do more on renewable resources. And yet at the same time, it has to be said, Minister Ryan has sat on his hands for the last couple of years, and there is enormous potential. But that would benefit the Shannon Estuary, because that's where all of the wind energy, you know, the turbines are could be assembled and sent out off to the Atlantic. And we could be actually exporters of electricity from this country. We could solve all our own electricity problems. And then in that scenario, you can say, can we have cleaner energy? But at the moment, we don't have any ambition to deliver that at pace. And that's another example, I think, of the Dublin mindset. If the opportunity was off the coast of Dublin, it would have been sorted long ago.
Yeah. Eddie, what are your views on health and UHL and the disaster that it has become recently?
You know, I hear people talking about they can't even get into the car park in University Hospital Limerick now because everything is centralised there. And I suppose, again, you know, if we go back a little bit in time, we had regional health boards. They weren't perfect, that's for sure. But they centralised it all in the HSE, and it has been an unmitigated disaster as far as I'm concerned. They can't even build a children's hospital on time and in budget. And their view, again, was centralising things. So everything was centralised in University Hospital Limerick. At the expense of Ennis and Nina. Now there's maybe a recognition that wasn't the best way forward. But I remember, you know, about when my mother was unwell and she had emphysema, chronic emphysema. And we brought her, you know, she was in now to the doctor and we brought her to the doctor and the doctor said, you know, your mother hasn't much time. And she had a bad episode at one stage and I brought her to the doctor and we had to bring her to, as we called it, the regional. And she said, oh God, why are you bringing me there? And she got very agitated. And we knew that what she needed was to get into St. John's in Limerick for basically to be minded. There wasn't a magic bullet in you know, there was no advanced surgery in the university.
But she just
hospital
needed to be comfortable.
But instead, she had to be processed through Limerick, spent a whole afternoon sitting in the waiting room with all the other accident emergency people. And that kind of mindset has to change. It wasn't people-centric. It was processed. It was all about the process. And the process was centralization. And processes are fine. I mean, in every business, you have to have processes and strategies and all of that. But you have to start with what do people need.
So what are your plans? What do you think you'll do?
So I think, and look, let's be clear about this. The European Union shouldn't be solving our health problems. We need to solve them for ourselves. My view is we need to get back to, you know, strengthening our local hospitals, getting away from the centralization of everything in. For example, University Hospital Limerick.
But they're increasing the number of beds in Limerick as well, rather than
doing it
in Nina or in Ennis, where people could go.
It's fine doing that for, you know, complex surgery, and it's, you know, there are reasons why you centralise expertise. But a lot of what goes on in healthcare is really about looking after people. Palliative care, or even basic. You know, surgery. And like we've seen tragically in University Hospital Limerick, some desperate cases where people have, you know, we have a tragic case in Shannon, right, which was down to the place is too big and too complex. So I want to see And I would be a voice for saying we need to decentralise and get away from this. Yeah. Because the HSE is absolutely jammed with middle managers, and this is causing immense difficulties in the way it's working. And, you know, I think, like, what we're also seeing, to be fair, is we have minister after minister going into the health sector, and none of them are able to get to grips with it. It has become too big for any one minister to solve. And I think the HSE model is not working, and if it isn't working, we need to address that.
Yeah, it's something they need to sort, you know, for the next but definitely for the next government that take over to sort the health issues.
Eddie, why did you decide to go as an independent candidate? You didn't choose any party. Had you ever any affiliation with any political party as a youngster?
Well, as in my ICSA job, it was a strict requirement that we were working with all government or all political parties. In fact, so you had to be strictly neutral, and I suppose. So you couldn't be a member of a party because of that role. So if I had wanted to join a party, it wasn't open to me in my job.
Of course.
Yeah. And then I suppose when I made the decision that I was going to step down from my role in ICSA, at that stage, the reality was that political parties didn't want me exactly because, you know, they have gender targets, they have various reasons. Yeah. So, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm saying I wasn't the right gender, I suppose, to be blunt about it. But having said that, as an independent, I feel that I will be able to represent the people of this region. Now, in the European Union, you join up with other political groupings. So everybody has the opportunity to join up. And I have contacts in Brussels. We're part of a thing called Farm Europe, or we were in when I was in the ICSA job. So I have a lot of contacts with MEPs from various groupings. But there's no whip system in Brussels because, you know, I suppose the interests are so diverse out there.
Yes.
But my priority would be to get onto the Agriculture Committee. So if I was elected, I'd be very much about talks with a number of political groupings.
And whichever one anyway.
would be, I suppose, most conducive to getting me onto the Ag Committee would be my priority.
Okay. Yeah. And have you many people working, you know, going out canvassing with you now?
How are you getting the word out
there? How big a group?
Yeah.
For an independent, it is hard.
It's a huge, huge challenge. Mm. And we have to do fundraising because this is immensely costly.
Yeah, I can imagine.
We had a meeting in Cratlow Community Hall during the week. We had 60 people there from the parish, which was great because there was a great community feel about it. And we're going to try and replicate that and move out. But, you know, anybody who can help the Eddie Punch campaign is, you know,
very
please, please get in contact with me. And we're hoping, obviously, to get a huge vote in Clare. But after that, it becomes very much a media and social media campaign as well. But, of course, I do have, I suppose, friends in every county, in the 10 counties, and we'll be trying to
that
work
would help.
That as
that
well.
Because it is a big thing. I mean, you probably have to get signs printed, literature printed, everything. Like, it's very, very costly and when you've not been backed by a party.
Everything is hugely costly now. That's an absolute fact. And, you know, well, look at, everybody knows now the cost of living has gone through the roof.
Yeah.
And people are struggling every week when they're doing their own shopping. Like, you know, I have kids, and when we pull into the filling station and they say they want to go in for sweets, you give them 20 euros and they come back for more.
You're looking for good change.
You don't get any change out of it.
No,
anyway.
you don't. So this is a costly campaign, that's for sure.
Obviously, you discussed it with your wife and children. What age are your children, Eddie?
13 to 6.
Oh, okay.
Oh, busy
good
age,
mix.
So.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, well, look, we did discuss it, and it's great that we have the support of everybody at home.
Yes,
Big decision to make.
It is a big decision, and it's great that I have the support of really great friends in Cratlow and Six Mile Bridge and all over, in fact. That's really important as well. And, you know, look, I think people are a bit frustrated with the existing parties in government and opposition. And I think the time is right now for independent candidates, and I hope that will help me get elected. And we need, you know, the quota will be about 120,000 votes.
I was just going to ask
what the population of Clare? What's
Well, there's about 60,000 people will vote in Clare.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, okay. Allowing voting the turnout is not 100%. But last general election was about 60,000.
Okay.
So this vote is on the 7th of June. It's the same day as the council elections.
Okay.
So I'd imagine it would be something in around 60,000.
And the fact that it's on the same day as the council elections, people are going to come out.
Yeah, because a lot of people...
They have the interest in the local election.
A lot of people are more interested in the local elections being blunt about it. But...
I think the European rules are important.
The rules that govern and the decisions that govern our lives are increasingly coming from Brussels.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to see more power with the local politicians, to be honest, but they don't have the resources or the funding.
Yeah.
And the big decisions are being made in Brussels. And, you know, to a certain extent, governments have been going to Brussels and going along with what Brussels is telling them to do. And I think we need to be a little bit more questioning of that. See, I believe the European Union, and like I said, I did European studies in UL in the 90s. So I'm really keen on the idea of the European Union. But that doesn't mean I believe they should govern every aspect of our lives.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
What if you're not elected, Eddie, what's plan B?
I'm going to go to Turkey and drink beer for a night.
You'll need a holiday.
so you'll cross that bridge when you come to it.
I have a farm at home. I'm a member of, I'm part of the board in Six Mile Bridge Mart. I have loads of interests. You know,
you're not going to be idle.
No, I'm sure hopefully Clare will be still going well in the hurling at
absolutely.
Anyway, hopefully it won't come to that.
No. Well, listen, Eddie, we'd like to wish you the very best of luck in your campaign, and thanks a million for coming in and letting people know who is Eddie Punch and what his issues are and what you are about, and the best of luck in the elections. We'll probably best talk again coming up to it.
Absolutely, and thanks so much for having me on, and I wish you all the best here in Scariff Bay Radio.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Eddie. Okay. Cheers.
Thanks, Eddie. Thank you.